This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer, and by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
Glad you're with us today until 1 o'clock on this St. Patrick's Day. And when it is St. Patrick's Day, that means we are getting really close to the actual baseball season, which will begin here in St. Louis a week from this Thursday. It is Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji today. We will talk to Gabe DeArmond, who does cover Mizzou basketball. And so we will talk about their first round matchup. And by the way, Mizzou, Illinois, and SLU, all of their games, late games. They all got the benefit of late games on Thursday and Friday in the NCAA tournament. We're going to focus on the Tigers a little bit later on with Gabe, but right now let's send it to Florida, and Tom Ackerman joins us from spring training.
Now, a St. Louis Cardinals spring training report, sponsored by St. Louis Composting. Composting, growing gardens and making memories. And by Happy Roof, we always create happy endings on the voice of the Cardinals, KMOX.
Guys, as always, wish I could be there with you, but we are calling the game right now. The Cardinals and the Nationals, Cacti Park of the Palm Beaches with Mike Claiborne and Stephen Carey. We're on Cardinals.com. Jordan Walker is in the lineup today. He's playing right field and batting second. The Cardinals have him there to get as many at-bats as they can. He has spent some time working in the cages, the hitting lab, if you will, and Ollie Marmol explaining what Walker has been doing.
He's trying to just continue to ingrain that the move of how he's loading and getting to his hitting position in order for it to translate into the game. Has done some stuff in a controlled environment, also against the traject at like game speed, and just trying to replicate it in hopes of just carrying it over.
One more day without Ivan Herrera, who is catching a bullpen session. He did that this morning, and tomorrow he is expected to be in the lineup as a catcher. The Cardinals looking to work him for at least a few innings. I'm Tom Ackerman in West Palm Beach, Florida. Let's send it back to the Gas House Gang.
All right, Tom, that is appreciated. And yes, the Cardinals are getting closer to the end of this Grapefruit League play, and Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji until 1 o'clock. All right, Bernie, he brought up a guy that we've talked about a lot in Jordan Walker, who is in the lineup today. And, you know, I've said this the other day. I'm not exactly sure what to make of him right now, because he still is of a very good age, which means he should conceivably have a lot of time to figure it out. The problem is that when you look at him and you look at his at-bats, even though sometimes he does hit the ball hard, he's still falling into the same traps as before, where he's hitting the ball into the ground. And clearly they want him to work on some mechanical stuff, which is why they took him out of spring games. So I don't really know what to make of where he is, or my confidence level, which at one time pretty high on him. I mean, that's evaporated a lot. And it's not that he can't come around here, and like I said, there is still time. He's only 23. It just, I don't know how to feel about him.
Listen, I'm just going to be very blunt about this, and no malice is intended, because I would very much enjoy seeing him become the kind of player that I think we all believe he can be. I take no pleasure in his failure. He's bottomed out. I mean, this is where he is. He's absolutely bottomed out, because here's why I say that. You know, statistically, the last 2 years, he was one of the very worst hitting outfielders in the sport. I got stats on that, but I'll just leave it at that. I mean, statistically, one of the worst hitters, really, any position in Major League Baseball over a two-year period. That's factually correct. Over the last 2 years, in terms of his wins above replacement among outfielders, he's like two wins below replacement level, which means he's below the level of just a guy. And his WAR among outfielders in the major leagues the last 2 years is the worst. So he works. He finally bought into listening to coaches and said, "Hey, miss, you know, we gotta work on a plan. You gotta try to do these things." And after him being oddly resistant for too long, by all indications, he worked very hard in the offseason and seemed like, okay, that's the first step. That's the only way it gets better. He's got to buy in and accept the reality that he's in trouble. And unless he starts taking advice from people, he's going to stay in trouble. So I think there were reasons for encouragement because his attitude had shifted, and that had to happen. But frankly, you know, I was thinking, you know what? He's going to have a great spring. He'll have a great spring. And listen, we can say all we want about how spring training stats don't matter. With a guy like Jordan Walker, they absolutely matter because he has a lot to prove and he did a lot of work in the offseason. So you want to see some evidence that it's paying off. He's got a 35% strikeout rate. He's hitting 200, 68% ground ball rate. 93% of the balls that he's put in play this spring have been either a ground ball or an infield pop-up. And his line drive rate is a sad like 10%. So that's why they shut him down, or that's why they moved him out of the fire and put him in the hitting lab. And frankly, it didn't seem like they kept him in there long. But one way to look at it, and I'm not trying to be snarky here, that it's a positive, but once you do, in fact, bottom out, there is only one way to go from there. So hopefully he'll get something going over the next 10 days or so. Just a spark, little confidence. He doesn't have much confidence. I feel bad for him in that regard. But if this continues to be a kind of a big goose egg this spring for him, I wonder whether the Cardinals would consider having him open the season at Memphis. They're under no pressure to do so. It's a rebuilding year, but the question does cross a lot of our minds.
Yeah, and I forgot who we talked to last week about that, about whether or not it would hunt. Maybe it was Xavier Scruggs, yeah, who was telling us that, you know, there's really not much left that he can do at AAA, and that being there doesn't, because he's not going to face what he's going to face when he comes to the big leagues. He's not going to see the same quality of pitching once he gets here. So it would almost be resetting him a little bit in a way. And I'm just paraphrasing what Scruggs said. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. It's just, look, what more can he prove down there? He has to prove it now against big league pitching. And if he can't prove it against big league pitching, then maybe his career's in trouble. Or maybe it'll end up being the kind of thing where he just has to go somewhere else. And it's not necessarily the Cardinals have done anything wrong with him. It's that maybe that shock of being in another organization is the thing he'll end up needing. Because this could just be largely psychological. And when it's psychological, I think that affects the sort of pitching, the pitches that you look for, what you end up chasing, and therefore what you end up making contact with or not. It's a lot about your psychology and not about game plan.
He has no confidence. I mean, and that's the sad thing about this. And I think the most alarming trend this spring training of all of them associated with Jordan Walker, we all know that his biggest issue the last couple of years has just been really bad, really bad plate discipline and chasing pitches out of the strike zone all the time. And I know that, man, it's so easy to put all the blame on the coaches, the batting coach, the manager, you know, everybody except the player himself. That's how it works. But he knows, he's a smart guy. He knows that for him to become a good hitter, the first thing he has to do is develop strike zone judgment, because if he doesn't do that, he's doomed, because pitchers will just prey on him and he won't be able to fight back. So the one thing I thought we definitely would see, because it's spring training, it's supposed to be easier, a lower caliber of pitchers you're going against. You know what his chase rate of pitches outside the strike zone is this spring? 40%.
Yeah,
that is glaring. So I would politely disagree with those who say that a trip back to the minors can't help him, won't help him. When a guy's confidence is totally gone, and when a guy no longer seems capable based on the stats, no longer seems capable of having the confidence to know the difference between a strike and a ball, I think he could use a reset at a lower league just to reestablish that confidence again.
And MB is watching us on YouTube. And by the way, we're on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter at KMOX Sports. And you can leave us comments, and we see a lot of them. And MB says, another Walker strikeout. I know it's spring training, but woof. And, you know, as we are doing this show right now, he did, in fact, on a 2-2 pitch. And here's the thing, and I'm only seeing the game report. I'm not actually able to watch the game at the moment. But he struck out on a 2-2 pitch. And it was a 94-mile-an-hour fastball inside the strike zone. So it's not like he chased something bad. To me, that's when I will get worried, is if it becomes become even more worried about him, is if he's missing on fastballs that are almost right down the middle. That would be a massive problem for him.
Well,
and 94-mile-an-hour fastball nowadays is not that fast.
His contact rate so far on strikes during the spring has been pretty good.
Yeah.
His overall contact rate has been horrible, but he has been hitting strikes better than he did last year in the regular season. So, you know, this one at bat he may not have, but he had actually made some progress there.
Yep.
See, I'm trying to be fair here and point out good and bad, but frankly, 90% of it is bad. As I like to say, I can only work with what the players give me in terms of it, like talking about whether they're doing well or not. They provide the material. I just go with what the material is. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't either.
Sad.
I think what the feeling I have, and I said at the start, I just don't know how to feel about him. What I think it is wishful. My feeling on him is I wish that he would figure this out, because I know there's talent there. But you know what? That goes for dozens of players that never do figure it out. That there's how does this guy not figure it out? How does he not do it? Look at him. Look at the pedigree. Look at the body. Look at his ability. Why is he not capable of figuring this thing out? He's got power. Why can't he realize it? And nobody seems to have answers for that. Other than it's a lack of confidence, but you don't know how to fix that. And I don't want to fixate just on Walker all day, because it's almost not a useful exercise. But he is important to their future. I mean, if they can get him to be productive even a little bit, like I've said before, that solves one spot on the field for them. And it could be a good solution for them down the road. They just have to extract it out of him, and I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I'm really sorry. Truly, I am, because I keep saying the same thing over and over again. His confidence is shot,
yeah.
And until that confidence gets a boost, it's going to be tough for him to dig out of this. I really do think, and if I have just a minute here, I really do think that if the Cardinals could go back in time, if they could do something all over again, they would have let him start the 2023 season in AAA. Now people will say, "Well, wait a minute, he had a 12 game hitting streak to start his career." Yeah, a lot of ground balls in there. And then he got to, when that streak was over, you look at what he did in April before they sent him down. It was pretty ugly. I mean, it was like he wasn't getting hits, and it was ground ball, ground ball, ground ball. See, they knew, and I'm talking about the front office at the time, they knew that Jordan Walker, for all of his potential, had a pretty serious ground ball problem in the minors. Well, the time to get in front of that is to give him time at AAA and really work with him before throwing him into the major leagues. The fact that he had a good first month, and I give him a lot of credit. See, he showed a lot of resilience as a rookie, because he did get sent down. He did have a lot of problems. It was the first time he had any real adversity. And if you look at how he finished up that year, it was really positive. So maybe he can have a similar bounce back. I really hope so.
Gabe DeArmond will talk Mizzou basketball with us just after 12:30. The Tigers play their first game of the NCAA tournament after 9 o'clock on Friday. They will have Miami here in St. Louis.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin comfort dealer.
Gas House Gang on KMOX is brought to you by Saliga Heating and Cooling, the overhead door company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck. Another Cardinals thing wanted to get into here, Bernie, as they are preparing for the opener, which is a week from Thursday. They'll be at Busch Stadium against the Rays. Ivan Herrera, who was, you know, we mentioned here off the top of the show, and the Cardinals wanting to give him some reps at catcher, and he's coming back from the injury. And he was, you know, arguably their best hitter last year. At least he was one of the most productive hitters they had when he was in the lineup. What are we projecting for him in 2026? And I don't know how I feel about the idea of giving him a bunch of reps at catcher once the season actually starts. I'd like to prolong his career a bit if possible. But, you know, I think that if he's in the lineup, he's going to help them. Just a matter of how much he can stay there. But what sort of production are we talking about, do you think?
Well, he's going to hit as long as he's healthy enough to be in the lineup. And you nailed it. And the thing of it is, the people that say, and I understand the principle they're talking to about, sorry, where it's like, look, if you have a catcher who is that great offensively, man, there are very few teams that have that. So that gives you a real advantage. That gives you so much value at that position that other teams don't have. In principle, that's correct. In reality, in this case, it's not correct, because playing catcher gets him banged up time after time after time after time. He has missed a lot of time over the last 2.5 years because of catching and the wear and tear on his body that creates some other physical issues for him. So I don't know what value, this extra value that he has because of his offense as a catcher, when the last 2 years, because of the injuries that were caused in effect by being a catcher, he averaged 350 plate appearances the last two seasons. Ivan Herrera with that kind of bat should be giving you at least 550 plate appearances a year. So they have actually lowered his value because his bat is not in the lineup enough to matter as much as it should. So frankly, all due respect, I do not understand the wisdom of this at all. He's not very good defensively. They have 4 young catchers ranked in the top 30, according to Fangraphs, in their organization. And every one of those catchers is much better than him defensively. And a couple of these guys can hit. My point is, he's not going to be their long-term catcher anyway. So I don't get the point of this, because somebody that hits that well, he's got to be in the lineup to make a difference.
The thing about having a good hitting catcher is it's great if you've already got a lineup that's strong 1 through the other 8. You know, if you're already pretty set otherwise, yeah, of course, you know, let your good hitting catcher be a catcher, because it's almost like a luxury at that point. But if you need the guy, if you're desperate to have him in the lineup because you need him available, because you need production since you don't have it anywhere else, it doesn't seem like the best idea.
And he's got 7 plate appearances this spring because he caught a little. I think he's only caught 7 innings, but his knee's been barking at him in pain. And it's kind of a here we go again thing. And I just don't get the logic of this. And the other thing I don't get, part two quickly, is that here's a guy that could play left field. I'm convinced of it. Left field is not a position for good defense. That's where people put hitters. We saw that with Chris Duncan, who was an outstanding hitter. Matt Holliday was made people nervous playing left field, but he was a great, great, great hitter, one of the most consistent hitters they've ever had. You can live with whatever defensive shortcomings he has. Ivan Herrera is a good athlete. He can move. He can run. He can cover ground. They should have invested time working with him to fully prepare him to play left field, and also prepare him to play some first base. See, that's how he has more value, because you can use him at like 2 different positions, and 3 if you count DH, and you can move him around. That's really valuable. Forcing him into a catcher spot where he's going to end up on the IL, that does not promote value. That negatively impacts value, in my opinion. So I don't know.
I think we are in agreement on this. Technically, tonight, the NCAA tournament begins with the first four games tonight and tomorrow. Then the full tournament starts on Thursday. The Billikens and the Illini play at about the same time. They start 20 minutes apart. And then on Friday, the Missouri Tigers here in St. Louis will be the 10 seed. Miami is their opponent. We are going to talk to Gabe DeArmond about that when we come back on the Gas House Gang. Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji on KMOX.
Now back to the Gas House Gang. Sponsored by Celica Heating and Cooling. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis. And Chesterfield Fence and Deck. On 104.1 FM, KMOX.
Yep, the NCAA tournament is today. The first four games are tonight and tomorrow. And then the rest of the field will start moving on Thursday. But on Friday, we're going to have to wait until then for the Missouri Tigers to get going. That game is going to happen here in St. Louis. They are the 10 seed, and they are taking on number 7, Miami. And to discuss that with us, we've got Gabe DeArmond here on the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Gabe, how's it going?
Not bad. What's up, guys?
Hey, we're looking forward to the tournament, and I got to tell you, I know a lot of people, Missouri fans are really happy they get to play in St. Louis. I know a lot of other people were not, that the 10 seed basically gets home court advantage.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything like nefarious about this. I mean, it's the way the seeds fell. There's bracketing reasons. We all know the tournament likes to maximize, you know, attendance and revenue and all that. That said, if I'm a fan of another team, particularly Miami or Purdue, I'm not really very happy about it either.
Hey, Gabe, Bernie here, man. Great to talk to you, brother. As always, loyal subscriber to PowerMizzou.com, and thanks for all the great information you and the staff provide. I love it. I just want to ask you this. Yeah, oh, you got it, man. I just want to ask you this. What's in the wind down there in Columbia in terms of, do you expect a really large turnout for among the Mizzou fan base, especially since it's a night game? It gives everybody plenty of time. How big of a crowd can we expect?
Yeah, it sounds like it. I mean, a lot of people on our message board are going. You know, I've heard from some friends who definitely plan to go. I know that tickets are not particularly cheap, but, you know, this is what I think it's been 44 years since Missouri played in the tournament in St. Louis. I don't imagine you don't have this chance very often, right, where you can just drive over and either drive back or get a hotel and come back in the morning. So I would expect it certainly to be a partisan Missouri crowd. I would think Kentucky fans would travel really well. Obviously, they're in the first session, but if some of them might have bought second session tickets too, you know, there might be some Kentucky fans there that would do the whole SEC thing. You know, Iowa State travels incredibly well. I mean, I think St. Louis has really hit the jackpot as far as fan bases to have there.
Beyond the fan bases, what about the quality of the teams themselves?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think Miami-Missouri should be a really competitive game. They are basically the same team. Miami's record is a little bit better, but the SEC is deeper and probably has more good teams than the ACC does. You know, but I think that should be a really good game. Kentucky-Santa Clara will be interesting. You know, Iowa State and Purdue you would think won't be interesting, but that's why we love this tournament, because something we don't think is going to be interesting frequently is, so you never know.
Gabe, not to get too inside ball with you, but I've been trying to look at this thing. I'm not deep into it, but you're right. They seem evenly matched, but it seems to me that this is such an obviously thing to say. So I'm hardly trying to act like Bill Raftery here, but if Mizzou can hit the threes, they probably win the game, because Miami has one thing they do not do well is defend the three well, but how reliable, in your opinion, have the Tigers been at shooting the three? Can we trust that factor?
Yeah, it's really been hot and cold. I mean, they've had a few games lately where they're like 1-for-9 or even 0-for at halftime. They do need somebody to make jump shots, because the book is out on how you defend this team. You pack the lane, you don't let Mark Mitchell get a million points, and you take your chances with somebody else beating you. Now, The flip side of that is Miami's the same way. I mean, neither one of them defends the three particularly well, but neither one of them shoots it particularly well. They get most of their points in the lane and at the free throw line. So, you know, there's no mysteries here. The scouting report is pretty much what you practice against every day. That's kind of what you're playing on Friday. So, you know, I fully expect this to be like almost every other Missouri game. It's going to be close with 2 minutes left, and we'll see who makes the plays down the stretch.
Was Missouri, for you covering the team this year, was that a frustrating watch for you?
I thought a lot of times they were not particularly fun to watch. You know, they played, I mean, Dennis's first two good teams, I throw out the second year, that was miserable to watch. But, you know, years one and three, like, even when they didn't win, that was a fun brand of basketball. It was a fun style to watch. It was wide open. It was up and down. And this is much more a traditional team that goes a little slower, that, you know, doesn't get as many steals, doesn't shoot as many threes. I mean, they're not even close to having shot as many threes as his first three teams did. So, yeah, it hasn't been the most fun team to watch, but guess what? If you win in March, it's great.
And tell us, Gabe, about Coach Gates and his popularity rating or his approval rating with the fan base. I mean, they are frustrating to watch at times, but we also know that they've made the NCAA tournament for the third time in 4 years. That hasn't happened since 2009-13, a five-year streak way back when. So he has moved the thing forward, but what's the popularity? What's the approval?
Man, how long do we have here? Because this is a complex question, and I could fill the rest of your show with this. I've said a lot of times his approval rating seems lower than the results on the court say it should be to me. Now, there are reasons for that. I mean, some people, after 0-19, there are some people that literally anything short of a Final Four is not enough for redemption. Like, it is the first thing brought up all the time, right? He had the worst season in school history, blah, 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 blah. And some people just won't ever forgive it. And look, I understand some of the hesitation to buy in, because this program, for the last 4 years, every time they do something that tells you, okay, I'm in, like the next thing is just tripping. I mean, you had the first tournament win in whatever, 11 or 12 years at that time, and Princeton upsets Arizona, and it's all there. And then, you know, Missouri gets beat up by Princeton with the Sweet 16 on the line. Then 0-19 happened. Then they get in the top 10 after one of the most fun games I've ever watched, beating Alabama last year. And you're thinking, hey, this could be a top four seed. Like, there could really be a run. They lose six of the last eight. Even this year, they get to the point where, I mean, I said after the Mississippi State win, I said, they're in the tournament. Doesn't matter what else happens. But you absolutely have been 100% sure they needed to win one more game, and they lost their next three games, you know, including Arkansas without Darius Acuff, and then one at Oklahoma where they just never even showed up. So every time you think there's some momentum, it goes away. And, you know, this stat going around now, it's driven me nuts, because for the last week, one more person every day will discover that Dennis Gates has lost 12 of his last 13 games in March and text me about it. I'm like, yes, I already know about this. I appreciate it, but I'm well aware of this. Congratulations to you for finding out. And you know, like, you, it's an arbitrary cherry pick stat, but March is really the only thing that matters in this sport. And that's going to be a thing until he turns it around. The last part of it is very simple. Eli Drinkwitz is a PR wizard. He gets behind a microphone. He gets in front of the media. Man, he's great. And so Drink, through 3 years, was 17-19. And, you know, there were some valid questions, but he was recruiting well. And he's just such a good talker that he made everybody believe and everybody was behind him. That's not Dennis's personality. I mean, his press conferences are, you know, winding roads. I mean, we joke, I'd like to play a game of, like, printing the answers and then say, guess what this was in response to, because you'll never guess, because he didn't answer the question that was asked. And he's like, that's just not his personality, and that's okay. Like, you don't have to be great at PR, but if you're not winning big, you do. And the last point is, like you were saying, yeah, it is much better than it was before him. Well, the problem with this basketball job is people your age, people my age, like, remember what it was under Norm, right? And I've said a number of times, when I was growing up, I was born in 1976. From then until 1995, which was my freshman year at Missouri, I believe Missouri was a top 15 basketball program in the country. Now, they never went to a Final Four, but Big Eight titles, tournament titles, one seeds, number one in the country at times. You know, it was a legit top 15 program. So there are a lot of people that remember that, and their argument for or against Gates, I guess, is, yeah, it's better than it has been, but it's not anything near where it was. Well, that's been 30 years, and Dennis Gates took over the Missouri program he took over. It's not his fault what happened the 8 years before he got here. So it's fair to want more. There does need to be another step. I mean, at some point you do get tired of, okay, well, we're in, but, like, we're not really a team that is a threat to do a whole lot. Personally, I don't think we're at that point yet, but with this class coming in, like, yeah, they do need to be better than a first round exit, or, you know, just, hey, maybe we can win a game. So probably sometime, I mean, if we're 2-3 years down the road and that hasn't happened, then I think it's very fair to ask, okay, is there a ceiling beyond what we've seen? But, you know, fans have never been more impatient than they are today, and they want that now.
Gabe DeArmond, PowerMizzou.com. They'll play at 9:10. That's the tip-off against Miami on Friday. They don't care much about how late the game is, right? I mean, whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. Both teams have to play at that time, yeah. Right? It's 10:10 for Miami. By the way, there's no chance it's tipping off at 9:10. I've been at these tournament games. It's whatever, 25 or 35 minutes after, yep, Purdue and Queens. And, you know, a friend of mine said it's going to be even later when the game before them goes to double overtime. I said, if that happens, Matt Painter might have to walk back to West Lafayette.
Well, enjoy it.
Thanks, man.
We're going to be paying attention, of course, because it's very rare that Mizzou, Illinois, SLU all in the tournament together. So this will be a good week. We appreciate you, Gabe. Thank you for being with us.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Gas House Gang is brought to you by Celica Heating and Cooling, the overhead door company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck. Bernie Miklas, Chris Ranji, just a few more minutes to go. Yesterday, Bernie, Shams Charania announced, or he reported, that the Board of Governors in the NBA is going to meet next week talking about expanding the league, expanding the NBA by a couple of teams. And there are only two teams on that list. It's Las Vegas and Seattle. And just looking at that, and there have always been these little murmurs about St. Louis potentially getting an NBA team, and would they even be able to support one? Would this city support one if it ever came here? And I think about the Rams leaving town and how supportive this city has been to and was to that NFL team, and now to the Battlehawks, which is a much smaller commitment, obviously, and the way they are committed to Blues and Cardinals while they are here. Would this market ever support an NBA team enough to keep one here, do you think?
Well, there'd be a huge amount of enthusiasm at first, and it depends how good the team is and how they grow and whether they can establish some success early and continue to get better. But if they're sort of a DOA expansion team that never just has a hard time gaining traction, I would wonder about the level of support, not because St. Louis is a bad sports town. That's quite the opposite. But we've seen, the Cardinals had 27 great seasons, and it's a body of work. And as soon as they went bad for the first time, they lost 1 million tickets sold in 3 years. The Blues have held up really strong, but they've had some patches where it's been a challenge. You have City SC, you have the Battlehawks. It's a good college sports area. I just wonder if the market is big enough to support you know, what amounts to, except for an NFL, you'd have a full menu of teams. That just seems like you'd be stretched to do that. And it's not going to happen anyway. I mean, Las Vegas and Seattle, they're huge favorites. Nashville's got a chance. There's even some other U.S. markets that, from what I have read, that would go ahead of St. Louis. St. Louis isn't even being mentioned. And I also think the NBA at some point will also expand internationally, you know, by putting a team perhaps in Mexico City. I don't know. But I just don't think it's I think it's kind of a pie in the sky fantasy. I don't think it's something that's even remotely possible. And we could have had an NBA franchise, but Bill Lowry blew it way back when. Do you know that story?
I know we had the ABA here. And
Bill Lowry bought the Vancouver Grizzlies, and he owned the Blues at the time. He planned to move the Grizzlies to St. Louis. He wanted to do it right away.
Wasn't this going to be the rhythm and blues thing? Wasn't that going to be the?
I have no idea what that was. He was going to move the team to St. Louis, the Vancouver Grizzlies. He had a meeting with David Stern. David Stern said, "Look, I can't let you do it right away, but you play a year there. The situation's not going to get any better. A year from now, we'll get this thing done, okay? But you got to sit tight for a year." Lowry said, "No, I'm not sitting tight for a year." And then he upped and sold the team to someone who a year later moved it to Memphis. If he had held in and just listened to David Stern's advice, St. Louis would have had an NBA franchise, but Bill Lowry was incredibly impatient and wouldn't go along with the plan. I mean, that was a huge missed opportunity.
You know what it seems like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but St. Louis has a history, a very long, long history of short-sightedness. I mean, going back 150 years, and it seems like that about the biggest things that still have effects today, you know?
Yeah, it's been, for being such a great sports town with the passion and energy, we've seen it at its very best for long periods of time. But man, when it turns quick. And I think that happens elsewhere, but it seems really drastic here.
Yes.
You know,
yes,
like does, all of a sudden you're riding the wave and it's just like crash, boom, wait a minute. Where'd everybody go? You know? So, I don't know how to like diagnose that, but I know it happens too much. And I think actually the Cardinals are a really good recent example of that.
Bernie Miklas, we will talk to you on Thursday. That'll be our next Gas House Gang, because we don't have Gas House tomorrow because of Cardinals baseball. We'll be live right here on our air. So talk to you Thursday, Bernie.
Thank you. I always love being with you, Ron.
You too,
thanks,
my friend.